Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next, you need the team to act on feedback fast. So you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/retro now for a free business plan trial to unlock advanced retro tools like private mode, voting, and two-way Jira syncing. That's Miro.com/retro now.
Hi there. Thank you for allowing me to be a part of your journey today. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio. Tonight, the subject is Bigfoot, and we're going to be discussing a compilation of sightings, encounters, and evidential findings as they pertain to Bigfoot in North America and those who have encountered them. This series is called Bigfoot Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters, Volumes 1 through 7, and they are available on Amazon in Kindle, audiobook, and paperback. And now here's my special guest, William Sheehan.
A fairly extensive medical background, medical training. One of the things I always pump when I'm talking about Bigfoot is the Patty film. You're familiar with the Patty film?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes.
Okay, so people have been debating whether or not that film is real, and I always thought it was real, and even more so after I had my medical training. And the reason I say that is because part of my training was kinesiology and myology, which is the study of human musculature. And then kinesiology is the study of movement, in particular movement of human beings. And so the two work together synergistically in that kinesiology identifies what muscles are moving when, where, and how when you're looking at a particular activity occur. Such as walking up a set of stairs or kneeling down or throwing a rock. And when I look at the Patty film, in particular that female Sasquatch in the film, we know she's female because she has breasts. The musculature underlying and attached to the skin has to be real and has to be immense to do and perform the way it does during her movements in that brief shot that Patterson got on that film. So I've always believed that Bigfoot is real. And now that I've been delving into the process of interviewing so many people, and of course attached to my podcast, the people coming in now are extensive. It would be foolish of me to believe anything else other than Bigfoot is real, just by the criteria met by the professionals and individuals I've spoken to who claim to have seen the beast. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it does. It does. And that is a beautiful way to start out, by the way, talking about that film, because that is fascinating. And how you, you know, really keyed in on the muscular movement up under all that fur or hair, whatever you want to call it, because to me, that's very convincing as well. So Kim, you know, when we were talking about Kim earlier, she's a physical trainer, a personal trainer. She's done this for over 20 years. I had her actually look at it.
the film. Mm-hmm. And she was like, wow, you know, I can see. She was naming off all the muscles. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That wasn't possible back then.
No, and Kate Town, if you put any type of costume other than like skin tight spandex with no fur on it on the most massive bodybuilder you've ever known, let's just say Lou Ferrigno, Arnold Schwarzenegger, their muscles, as big as they were bodybuilder muscles. They were not just bulk mass like a grizzly bear or a moose. This creature has tremendous musculature without the aid of bodybuilding in a gym three times a day. It simply is a massive and powerfully made creature and is capable of incredible feats of strength and ability to run and everything else that you can imagine, aside from walking in that picture and us being able to identify the muscles popping underneath the skin, attached to the skin as the creature moves. You couldn't fake that. You can't fake what's going on in that picture.
Right. You're exactly right. Have you ever been to that area of the country to try and see that? You know, I heard it was all grown up, but I'm not sure. But have you ever ventured up that way?
No, I haven't. But it's funny, I have an account in Volume 9 where a couple of old dogs decided before they died they were going to go over there and get a look at the place. And they had camped just north of it and rode down into it. And, you know, you can walk around in there. And according to their description, they walked right into it and got the vibe of what it must have been like that day when Patterson and Gimlin were there. They set up some trail cams. Of course, they were hoping to see something, which they did not. They caught a couple of mountain lions. They caught a bear on the, one of the cameras, some deer. But they left the place feeling very satisfied. It was like a primeval forest, you know, untouched by man even to this day. This pristine wilderness, you know, where some would say it all began, at least for the modern day folks in North America.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. So have you talked to have you ever talked to Bob? Have you ever met him? Yeah.
Bob Gimlin? No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
Huh. No, I'm not a person that really it's funny too, because like I do with what I do, simply out of my own human interest on the subject. And I really don't a lot of people contact me. But I'm not really out there contacting a lot of people. I'm more interested in talking to people, finding out what they know, what they've seen, who they know. And my subject matter covers everything from UFOs, cryptids, angels, Bigfoot, and you name it. Now, Bigfoot is particularly the highlight of my podcast, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods. But myself, I've had numerous angelic encounters. I've had numerous UFO encounters. And I've never seen a Bigfoot. But that doesn't mean I don't believe in Bigfoot.
Right.
You see, Carl Sagan, there's two principles that I work off of that revolve around Bigfoot. Let's just say in particular for this conversation around Bigfoot. Carl Sagan once said that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Now, my opinion is this. Based purely on what I have been told by hundreds and hundreds of interviewees, I find it extremely difficult to say anything other than the threshold was crossed a long, long time ago. The other thing is this. To those who believe, no further evidence is necessary, and that would include me. To those who don't believe, no amount of evidence will suffice. And that's the way I feel about it. I am not in the business of convincing anybody that Bigfoot is real. I believe he's real, and that's good enough for me. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that's great. That is a great way to put it. I'm interested in your research and how you actually gather your stories. William, can you talk to us about it? Is there any kind of vetting you do with people? Do you kind of get a feel for what they're telling you? You know, if it's true, you know how people are. They like to exaggerate and make up things. But how do you do that?
That's true, K-Town. But, you know, in my position, like I just said to you, I've had numerous angelic encounters. If I was to tell people about my angelic encounters, which occasionally I do, and everybody that I spoke to thought that what I was telling them was not true, even though all of them are true, where would I be if K-Town was telling me about what she saw in northern Idaho by Priest Lake relative to a Bigfoot sighting? And she seemed credible in everything else she was saying. Where would I stand in regard to my own truthful stories if I said that K-Town's full of a bunch of manure?
I got you. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Do you know what I'm saying? I am the kind of person where I do vet people basically in my gut when I'm talking to them. I get a feel. And it's the same way when I'm living my life, irregardless of talking about Bigfoot or just meeting somebody on the job. I get a gut feeling about an individual, true or false, when I'm talking to them. And really, if you think about even our court system, just to take a sidelight for 15 seconds, if you're a juror on a jury, what are you doing? You're listening.
Right.
You're basing what you hear from Part A, Part B, Part C. You're making a judgment call in and of yourself. And in the end, you're going to cast a vote, yay or nay, based on everything that you've heard. I mean, is that true?
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right.
So I do the same thing when I'm talking to individuals. And I'll say this much. There are people out there. I live in a fairly suburban area. It's difficult for people in suburbia to look outside of the box to those who are living lives in communities and areas where the nearest person to them might be a mile away. And when you're getting stories from a guy who is one of a handful of moose guides on the planet, or somebody that leads pack trips into the Rockies for a week at a time, or somebody that spends 100 days in the woods in the Pacific Northwest hiking and hunting. And not that that doesn't count out the fact that Bill or K-Town could be riding down the interstate and encounter one of these things walking along the shoulder of the road. I don't discount anybody. But it's very hard when you're talking to people who really know their stuff and are putting them out there. And I'm talking about DEC officials, policemen, hikers, skiers, people who are really outdoorsy and at it on a regular basis. And they have this once-in-a-lifetime encounter. It's very difficult to discount everything else they're saying. And then say, you know, that, well, the Bigfoot's not true either. You know what I mean? It's just very difficult for me as a human being To go into something thinking ahead of time that everybody's full of baloney.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at miro.com/diagram now.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
And I get it. I do get it. And I had to ask you that. So thank you for explaining that to us. And I want to go ahead and allow you, William, to discuss one of them in your book that caught my eye. And listen, you have a lot of stories in here. I don't expect you to know the details of all of them, but maybe you'll know this one. It's page 75. It's called The Missing Survivor.
Oh, yeah. That is a real creep fest, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Can you tell my listeners about that one?
Well, let me work on my recollection of this. And you're right. There's so many in there. I have literally accounts bouncing around in my head. And they come to me during conversations. But The Missing Survivor, there was a, correct me if I'm wrong, if you just read it, a science teacher had made a habit of inviting some of his senior class people from the high school out with him towards the end of each summer to do some survival training or go out and kind camp in the woods with him. So his mainstay was a science teacher, but he had like this wanderlust for being a survivalist, even though he was cooped up in a classroom. And so he had taken this group of kids out, and his habit was to teach them some real basic points of survival, and in particular, how to make a structure to protect you from the weather or to sleep in. And they had gone to two locations, as was his habit. And in the second location, they built a particular type of kind of lean-to. I visualize it, and I forget the name he had for it. But in other words, if you had your druthers, you would take one long branch or portion of a tree and lay it on top of a stump. And then you would lay other sticks and branches alongside of that one laying down to form like this half of an arrowhead or half of an elongated triangle that you could slide into and sleep in. Now, because they didn't have, you're not going to find a place for all of the students that came with him and himself with all these stumps lined up around, they just modified it by taking one stout branch and then building like a little A-frame on the front and running it down the side. So anyway, they had these shelters. And they had a fire in the middle of them. And the shelters were set up around the fire for warmth and just so that everybody would have light. And during the night, as I recall, somebody woke up because of a flame or a bright light flashed in their eyelids. It turned out that one of the air mattresses was on fire. And, of course, that individual jumped out, and then a couple more people jumped out. before they realized the person to whom the air mattress belonged was no longer with them. This individual, I want to say that part of their belongings was found a considerable distance from the camp, and I forget what it was. I don't know if it was his baseball cap or something or other, but the body was found miles away on a sandbar in a river, as I recall. Was that correct, Kaitan?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yes, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, one would say there was a big investigation and a search. A stranger actually found the body on a sandbar. But this is not the first time this has happened, where people go missing in the woods and they're found with a limb torn off, or their head spun around backwards, or sitting in a weird place with their clothing having been taken off and the shirt buttoned improperly put back on. People are being found with boots, their boots, put on the wrong feet. You say to yourself, who or what is doing this? You know, I spoke to a number of hunters. Now, I shoot, but I shoot for sport. I don't hunt. And when I say sporting, I'm talking about skeet and trap, shotgun shooting. I've asked some hunters how difficult it would be for anything to pull a limb off of a human being, particularly the leg. And they've told me it would be damn near impossible, similar to removing the limb or the leg from an animal. You would have to get in there with a real sharp knife and do your due diligence removing everything before you'd be able to remove the leg. So my opinion is that people are being taken in the woods by Bigfoot, and that not every Bigfoot that is run across in the woods is happy to see you. I know there are people in TV shows out there where they're marching around in the woods with no arms, and I'm talking weapons, night vision cameras, flashlights, you know, hoping to run into this thing. And my opinion is this. If you run into a Bigfoot and you make it home that day, you've had a really good day. I think Bigfoot is a lot like a dog. Some dogs you can pet. Some dogs run across the street before you even see them to try and bite you. And my belief is that Bigfoot is an animal, and that as such, you got some decent ones and you got some real nasty ones.
You're exactly right. And I want to give you a moment to, because people just will not believe this. That story really stood out for me. I haven't heard anything like that. But just to go back and talk about this encounter, because I want to ask you something about this gentleman that told you the story.
Yeah.
What was the guy's injuries again when they found him?
I thought he had a limb missing. All right. And his head was twisted backwards. And I want to think that his chest was collapsed. You see, in my end of things, there is a lot of repetition. We're putting together a big puzzle. And although somebody thinks what they have to say may be insignificant, when I hear that from 15 people, it's no longer insignificant. It's a pattern. It's a developing a story, an MO, like a serial killer or a criminal.
Okay. Okay. So you've heard of those types of injuries before? I mean, people have told you about that. I mean, that happening to other people?
Absolutely. Let me tell you something else that's quite gory. Two hunters checking out a place to put their bow stands in Northern California for the fall hunt. They had been to the same location many times before, successfully, and that's why you go back. They had scoped out a spot and were really ready for all intents and purposes to leave. When one of them said, you know, just for giggles, let's check out over here and see what's in. They hadn't been in this area before, but they wanted to go in and just see if there was anything better over there. They decided to divide and conquer, saying, you know, if you see anything, give me a shout. They split up, going into this area of the woods. And the one guy shouts to the other one, like, hey, Joe, you better get over here. There's something you got to see. He comes over to where his friend is standing. And I want you to visualize what I'm about to say. They were standing in a forest of large pine trees, fir trees. The lower limb on this particular tree was long since dead, still attached to the tree, a big, sizable limb coming out from the bottom of the tree at about 7 feet off the ground. On this limb was the stump left over from another limb that went off of it during the tree's lifetime. But all of that limb was gone except for a couple of feet of stump, still attached to this long limb coming out horizontally. On top of this limb, this stump, pressed down over it and running through her, was the body of a woman. She had a black, long ponytail. The stump was coming through her back out of her chest. She was wearing a lycra shirt, spandex bra, and had on a pair of running shoes and shorts. They believed she was a jogger. Now, there was nothing under this branch to stand on, no rocks, nothing around, in the middle of nowhere. And here is this woman, dead, arched backwards, shoved down over this stump protruding from her body. The fellow who gave me the interview was 6 foot tall. He said the branch, the main branch, was higher than his head, and the stump stuck up another couple of feet above that. So let's just say 8 to 9 feet just to get to the top of this stump that the woman had been jammed down over brutally. Now I ask you, for what reason would anybody have put that woman there and gone to that trouble in the middle of nowhere to hang her out there like a trophy? One of her limbs was also missing from her body.
Never heard anything like that before. That is creepy as hell.
Yeah. Now, my opinion was that some of these creatures are putting things out there as like a trophy or an indicator of, this is my space. Go no further. This can happen to you. You remember the old story of Vlad the Impaler over in Transylvania?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes,
all right,
yes.
So we all know the story. He used to hang his victims on stakes leading up to the castle.
And leave them there. Yeah, he used to leave them there, yeah.
Leave the corpses laying there. So if you were ballsy enough to approach walking through them, you were probably thinking to yourself, it's going to be me or him, and if it's me, I'm going to end up on one of these sticks leading up to the castle, you know. And I don't think it's much different with some of these creatures. You know, they leave these tree structures, and everybody's trying to figure out what all these tree structures mean, and we'll never know. But they obviously use some symbology in their realm, whether they're talking to us or themselves, we don't know.
Wow, that is... what state was that?
That was also in Northern California.
Okay. So yeah. Have you gotten more weird encounters from... I mean, can you pin that down for us? Like, where are the most bizarre deaths believed to be caused by Bigfoot, possibly? What states or areas that's coming from?
There are so many encounters all over the place. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you, share another encounter with you. Like a lot of people say, where are the bodies? And bodies have been found. Bodies have been, animals have been shot. And they seem to get no headlines and or disappear.
Bigfoot bodies. Is that what we're talking
about? I'm talking Bigfoot bodies.
Gotcha.
I have a Mexican-American couple. They were driving up here in the Northeast, and Wilfredo and Helena. And they were coming up a grade on the highway, and way up ahead of them, they saw the back of a trailer truck with the flashers on the shoulder. And as they continued, the highway was strewn with broken materials. I'm talking glass, pieces of metal, chunks of fiberglass, a mirror, fluid. As they're dodging this stuff and moving forward to where the tractor trailer truck was, Wilfredo said he noticed something on the shoulder in the dark. He thought it might have been a big bear or a moose or something. But he continued on his way, thinking in his own mind that the truck had hit whatever was on the shoulder. I mean, good thinking, right? Debris all over the road, truck with the flashers, some mound of animal on the shoulder. He gets up to the truck, hops up on the fuel tank to grab the driver's door, and the guy is sitting there with his head in his hands. Wilfredo shouts into him, "Hey, buddy, are you all right?" The guy doesn't respond. Wilfredo says to him again, "Hey, mister, are you okay?" The guy looks at him and he says, "I just hit a Bigfoot chasing a deer back there on the highway." And he puts his head back in his hands on the steering wheel. Wilfredo says to him, "You hit what?" And he looks at him again. He says, "I just hit a Bigfoot chasing a deer across the road." Now, Wilfredo jumps down, gets on his phone, and calls the cops. Minutes later, ambulance shows up, one trooper, then another trooper. Finally, the guy gets down out of the truck. Wilfredo's talking to the one trooper. The other ambulance attendant and trooper are attending to the guy. Well, it turns out he broke the windshield with his head, which is why he was holding his head. The trooper starts to walk back down the road to where this animal was. He's got one of these big Maglite flashlights. Wilfredo's following behind him, and he tells him to stay back. A wounded animal may jump up and attack. As he gets close to this thing and he puts the light on it, Wilfredo said it wasn't a bear or a moose. It looked like a gigantic gorilla. And when the light hit the animal, he saw its eye blink and he saw it moving its fingers. The cop told him to stay back, pulled out his gun, and put three shots into the Bigfoot on the shoulder of the road to put it out of its misery. Wilfredo and Helena left that night minutes later, saying to each other after Wilfredo told Helena that it was a Bigfoot, they were saying to themselves, what a fantastic news story this is going to be tomorrow in the papers or on the news. Well, the day came and went, nothing was said. He called up a local news network and asked them why they didn't run the story. They said they didn't know anything about it. And when he told them all about it, still nothing was said. Now, what do you think about that? That's just one instance.
Yes, and I believe that happens probably more than the general public realizes. Like, yeah, if it happens in a heavily populated area or maybe a tourist, where tourists come, there's no way they're going to let that get out. There's just no way, because no one's going to, you know, flock to places where, you know, like, for example, the lady was up on that stump. I mean, come on. No one's going to go to the area. So, yeah, I think they keep that stuff under wraps if they can.
Yeah, well, this stuff is happening all over the place. And so when you say, where are these things happening? I mean, you could almost name the states and there are things happening right there. I had a guy in New Jersey who was cooking sausages on his barbecue on his deck. He went inside to get the fixings for the table, ketchup, mustard, you know, his stuff. When he came back outside, the Bigfoot was standing next to the railing looking at his barbecue. He freaked out, threw everything in the air, ran back in the house, figuring this thing could come in anytime it wants to. He described it as being 9 foot tall and as wide as a piece of plywood. When he went outside, all the sausages, which had been thrown down onto the ground off of the plate, were gone. And so was the Bigfoot. So you want to talk about opportunistic. I mean, these things aren't any different than any other animal out there. They know where the apple trees are. They know where the water is. They know there's fish in the water. They know where chicken coops are. They will take your pet if you let it run around and they're hungry. You know, they're opportunistic. They're survivors. And when they come into the proximity of human beings, they're no different than the bear that's seen going in the dumpster at the park.
Let me ask you something, William, though, because many people report that, you know, they're there 1 minute and then they're gone the next. So do you think maybe possibly they can come in and out of our reality? That's why they can disappear so quickly.
Okay, so now you opened up another kettle of fish. And I'm glad you did, because in my mind, and I speak about it all the time on my podcast, there are two distinct realities about the Bigfoot creature. Number one, we have a created creature from the beginning by an almighty God, like the lions, the tigers, the bears, and everything else we know on this planet, flesh and blood, that lives and dies. And then I believe we have something else going on, and I believe that it comes from the demonic realm. It's a mimicking of the creation for nefarious purposes by none other than, let's just say who he is, Satan himself. The reason I say this is because there are too many instances where people are filming this creature on infrared in the woods, and they seem to go behind what I will call a veil or a straight line, disappearing into basically nothingness or oblivion. There is nothing that big that even as it disappears into the woods, is going to be gone entirely without seeing flashes of it between branches and leaves and whatnot, and certainly not as though you walk behind a concrete wall of a building in the city. You may walk behind the edge of a tree trunk, but when you're 3 or 4 feet thick, you're going to be seen coming out of on the other side of your butt sticking out from one side or the other. You're not going to disappear entirely. And there are other encounters where Bigfoot is seen in proximity of or involved with UFO activity and orbs. Now, if you're asking me what I think of them, I also think that the entire UFO phenomena is of demonic origin. And that's coming from somebody who has had numerous UFO encounters, that being me.
That's shocking. I didn't expect you to say that. What do people say? I mean, how do others feel? I mean, you have a podcast, you talk to people about it. So
yeah.
When you bring that up, do they agree with you, or what kind of reactions are you getting out of people?
Well, those that, obviously, people who listen to your podcast, they like what you do. There are many people who agree with me, and then there's many others who write in and they agree to disagree with certain aspects of what I say or who I am. And I'm a very unapologetic individual as far as my beliefs and the things I say go. I say what I say because I believe what I say, and I'm not easily swayed off of my position. I have certain beliefs that are hardcore, and whether you believe them or not, it's not up to me to convince you. I might feel sorry for you. I might feel a lot of things towards you, but I don't feel obligated to make you believe what I believe. You can walk away from me and call me a liar. You can walk away and say, you know, he's full of beans. He never had any angelic encounters. You'd be wrong. But you're free to say that. You could say he's never had any UFO encounters. They're all made up. You could say that, but you'd be wrong. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but again, I'm not trying to convince anybody. I'm talking about information. I'm sharing data. And then it's really inevitably up to the individual, isn't it? Whether they believe any of this or not. There are people who look at the Patty film after I've shared a little expertise about my opinion on it, and they maintain their opinion that it's a hoax. I'm not going to spend much time with these people trying to convince them otherwise. I mean, it's just, it's a waste of my time. And why would I? I just move on to somebody else and keep hunting down the mystery.
Right. Have you gotten any kind of reports from professionals, like maybe park rangers? That would be a dream, you know, park rangers, maybe emergency personnel, rescue people.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Can you tell us about something they told you?
Yeah. And one thing I want to share with you, when you talk about, have you gotten any reports from any professionals? And we'll get into that. Bring me back to that. But before I forget, I want to share something with you. So in the course of doing the podcast, you know, a lot of people contact me. And one of the guys that contacted me in the beginning of COVID, we were in like 2 or 3 months into COVID. This particular individual was a lifer, is a lifer in the military. And he shared with me an encounter that he had. And during our conversation, which probably lasted a couple of hours, he says to me, I got something you really want to see, and I'm gonna send you an email. He sends me an email, and laid out over a picnic table is a two-sided map, enormous map, 3 feet by 5 feet. And in one of the pictures, his finger is pointing at a corner of the map. The next picture was a close-up of his finger pointing and what it was pointing at. Months later, I won't tell you the whole story because we could spend 15 minutes just talking about that. Months later, he decided that I deserved to have this map because of the work I'm doing. Now, let me tell you what this map is and what's on it. The map came from a survival training school in Washington State. It was given to this man by a soldier who had undergone the survival training at that school. The training had gone on, I believe, in the early 70s. And I would say that probably everybody there got a copy of the map. In the corner of the map, it's not like any map you've ever seen, but in the corner of the map, there's a section that lists dangerous animals. And on the map, there are topographic clues, pictures of edible plants in the region, poisonous plants. In one corner of the map, there are dangerous animals listed. Now, mind you, this is a map for people who are doing survival training in Washington State. On the map, there's a bear, moose, bobcat, cougar, wolverine. And guess what else is on there, K-Town? Sasquatch. This is an official government-issued map. Now, they don't fool around in the military. They're not plugging something on there because they've got nothing better to do or for a joke point during, you know, a drill or some type of training session. They don't do things that way.
Oh, I know. I've been in the military, so.
Okay. And here we have the Sasquatch on this survival school training map, warning the personnel of the potential of running into one of these beasts while they're doing their training.
Do you know where he was stationed?
I'm not telling you where he was stationed.
Okay.
And I know another man, also a lifer, who had shared an experience with Bigfoot with me. I told him about the map. And he said, I know what you're saying is true because I have seen the same map, but in a different area of the country where my survival training was going on. And on that map, there was no Sasquatch.
Can we see the map? Do you have it online? Or I mean, are you showing it to people or no?
Not really, no. I did show it the other day. I did a an interview with some guys on a show called Bigfoot Experience. And I showed the map on camera. And it was funny because one of the guys doing the interview had a clip. Somewhere he got a clip of the Sasquatch from the corner of the map, downloading it online somewhere. And it was the exact clip of the corner of the map of which I own the whole map. He just had the corner shot of the Bigfoot off of the map.
Right, right.
Okay. So me and the other soldier were of like mind in that the map he saw didn't have the Sasquatch on it because, in their opinion, the creature wasn't a threat to him or anywhere else where he was doing survival training.
That is pretty interesting.
Yeah, in other words, there's only certain areas of the country where a grizzly bear would be a threat to you. A grizzly bear is not a threat in Virginia, but a black bear might be. So they're not going to put a grizzly on a map where you're doing survival training in Virginia because there are no grizzly bears there, or that they know of, right?
Was he in the Army?
I'm not telling you what branch of the service he was.
Okay, gotcha. I have to try.
No, I mean, I live and die by my confidentiality. And when you read the accounts in my books, nobody's name is their real name.
Okay, gotcha.
So if I was interviewing myself, it wouldn't be W.J. Sheehan. I'd be, Larry Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter because it's just a name. You know, what we're doing is telling the account, and many people don't want you to know their name. It's a freaky deaky kind of thing in the land of cryptids, Bigfoot, UFOs. A lot of people have and do not want to be associated with anything relative to their experience, believe it or not. I mean, they know what happened to them, but in their professional business, it could ruin them.
Right. And let's talk about professionals, too, because we're running out of time here. But let's go back to, because I asked you about reports from professionals. And can you tell us about something that stands out to you?
Well, I mean, there are many like DEC people who have encountered Bigfoot. One of them had what I call a simple sighting. Now, really, no sighting is simple, right? They're all extraordinary. He had an assignment of watching the lumbermen, the lumber trade, doing their work. And basically, he was just to keep an eye on them, make sure they didn't infringe on any waterways, certain areas or boundaries they weren't allowed to cross, things like that. So he was just like security in a light way, watching the lumber industry and make sure they did things according to protocol. So he was coming over to his truck out in the woods, having checked out this waterway to make sure that they had respected the boundaries that they were instructed to. And walking back to his truck, he looks over and he sees something looking at him out of the branches of a couple of big trees. He knows immediately what he's seeing, and he can't believe it. The Bigfoot ducks down and like scurries away into an area. But he knows he saw it, and you would think it knows he saw him too, you know? He gets in his truck, and he starts rolling down the road, and this thing is following him. He's doing really slow, like kind of not letting on that I'm looking, you know? He's going really slow, and this creature is following him through the trees, watching him as he's rolling away. And I thought that was pretty cool in its simplest form, how, you know, this guy, it's almost like peekaboo with like a kid, you know, like the guy knows he sees him, and the creature had to have seen him looking at him eye to eye. And yet it follows him a little bit, but never really visibly pops out to say, here I am, you know. I just thought that was really neat because every Bigfoot account is not spectacular. You know what I mean? Like, I had some guys who were fishing up in Canada, and during the course of their fishing on this lake, they visually encountered two Bigfoot having a fight. And the description of the fight and what happened during it and leading up to it and afterwards was incredible. And they were in three boats fishing for muskies close to the shore on a lake in Canada when this thing unfolded in front of them on the bank of a lake. So you want to talk about incredible encounters, you know. There are incredible encounters. I have an account. This officer didn't tell me what state he was in. My impression after talking to him and having been around a little bit was that he was in New Hampshire. At any rate, he was a trooper on night duty, and his job was typically to park out on the highway with radar looking for speeders. So he had told me earlier in the night he had staked out a stop sign in some area, gave out a couple of tickets, and then he went out on the highway. He was parked next to a granite wall, and his car was situated in such a way where he was backed up against the trees. The granite wall from this outcropping was to his left, and in front of him and to his right was completely open. So if somebody came speeding down the road, by the time they saw him, it was too late and he already bagged them with the radar gun. So he sees some headlights coming. And all of a sudden he hears the car laying on the horn heavily. You know, goes racing by him. And, you know, he's thinking, you know, I wonder what they were beeping at. Well, he got out of the car to go behind the car to take care of some business, if you catch my drift. And when he turned around to walk back to the driver's door, something came out from behind the granite wall, walking down the shoulder now in front of his car. It was gigantic. He grabbed his pistol and he grabbed his flashlight, flipped it right on him. As soon as he saw it, this thing opened its mouth, started growling at him, and it was immense. It was a Bigfoot. He didn't know what to do. Pull a trigger, scream. He didn't have to do anything because after the Bigfoot made this snarling move at him, it turned and bolted across the street in a couple of hops into the woods. He got in his car and drove across the street, and took the spotlight on the side of the car and was shining it into the woods and saw red eye shine, and then thought he saw the thing take off. He became the laughing stock in his little precinct, sharing what had happened to him. And he was close to 25 years on the job and retired some months later after this happened to him.
That's so interesting.
You don't necessarily want to share out of the goodness of your heart what happened to you, because there's going to be ridicule, there's going to be mockery, there's going to be comments made that if you have thin skin, it might get to you.
I totally get why some people are reluctant to share, and then when they do, they don't want their name out there and attached to the story. So I do get it. But this conversation has been very, very interesting. I have enjoyed it, and I want to give you an opportunity, William, to tell my listeners where they can find out more information about you or anything else you've got going on.
Well, certainly you can tune into the podcast, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods, W.J. Sheehan. And then you could go to Amazon, where I have paperback and ebook formats of 8, soon 9 volumes of Bigfoot Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters. And then you can go to Audible. And you can currently purchase 8 volumes in Audible format if you like to do that plug and play thing. I also have the 3 books in my Exorcist series, The Exorcist, Full Moon, The Exorcist Diabolica. And, I don't want to forget my new book, How to Make Money, God's Universal Laws for Wealth and Prosperity. That book is a real eye-opener in a completely different light of how to change your life around and line yourself up with some laws and principles that have always been there that will help you have a good life and make a good living. So there you have it.
That's awesome. I'm going to bring you back to discuss that one. And William's book is called Bigfoot, Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters. This is volume 2, and you can get all of them on Amazon, and I will have the links in the show notes. William, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. Anytime you want to chew the fat, give me a call. I'm always available.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/diagram now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more features like advanced shapes, dependency mapping, and two-way Jira syncing. Get started today at Miro.com/diagram now.